On the ballot this November in New York, in addition to all your local political races, will be an opportunity to add 15 words to the state constitution and potentially enshrine environmental rights for generations to come. The decision comes after lawmakers in 2019 and again this year passed legislation that would amend the state constitution to guarantee a right to clean air and water and a healthful environment. Whether or not this language is ultimately added to the constitution rests with you, the voter. To assess this issue, including what the amendment will mean and what the campaign for passage could look like, we're joined by Kate Carrera, Deputy Director of Environmental Advocates NY, which pushed for passage of this measure. Welcome to the show, Kate.
Hi, thank you, Dave. Thanks for having me.
So, Kate, I want to fast forward to a New York in the future, say 2022, where this environmental language is added to the state constitution. Mm-hmm. Who's going to get to define the new terms that we're going to have in our constitution? And can we start with, you know, clean, a term that might have, you know, various meanings when it comes to water and air, depending on who's judging?
Right. I mean, this is a great question. And, you know, when we get to the point in 2022, when we actually have this enshrined in our constitution, you know, that will be a really amazing day for New Yorkers to acknowledge that value and what that means in terms of, you know, what the environment and our health and how that's prioritized in terms of having that, you know, legal right enshrined. What does clean mean? Well, I mean, like a lot of constitutional rights, what does free mean? What does freedom of speech mean? What does free mean? I guess I throw that rhetorical question back on. I mean, these are terms that, yes, you've made an observation that they are not defined in the legislation as such, but these are terms that will define themselves through the courts if this right is challenged. But really, like, what clean means is, you know, we deserve to drink water and breathe air that doesn't make us sick, right? That we shouldn't have to be worrying about that when we turn on the tap, like the residents in Hoosick Falls, that we're going to get, you know, terminal illnesses and cancers. That when we live in communities in the South Bronx that are, you know, breathing just terrible air, that develop chronic asthma and have the worst, you know, health impacts from, say, COVID and other illnesses.
Well, you mentioned the issue of like clean drinking water, and we recently did a segment on the show about lead in school drinking water, which is currently allowable up to 15 parts per billion, but there's a push to lower the threshold to 5 parts per billion, even though some health experts say 1 part per billion should be the standard. How would something like this be resolved? Are we essentially going to leave it up to a judge to weigh the different arguments, these different medical arguments, and essentially say 1 part per billion is the threshold we should live with, or 5 parts per billion, or we're good with 15 parts per billion currently?
Well, no, I mean, that's not exactly how it will work. So this right in the Constitution would not supplant, you know, any of our existing environmental laws or existing environmental regulatory framework that's, you know, absolutely necessary for protecting public health and the environment. This is, you know, something different in that having that constitutional right, having that right, you know, being a fundamental right, that being one added to the Bill of Rights of the Constitution, gives us New Yorkers, that's something we hold. We hold that right, right? That the government cannot infringe upon that right. I guess in a theoretical world, you know, something like a lead standard could be challenged through that process. But it's not quite as simple as saying the courts would be the ones defining what, you know, the actual, you know, parts per billion is.
Well, right? Why not? If I'm a parent of a school child and I've seen this report that says 1 part per billion lead is the right maximum threshold, why can't I sue, you know, the state and say, I've got a right to clean water, and you're giving Johnny 15 parts per billion, or Susie's got 15 parts per billion lead, so, you know, your law is unconstitutional?
Well, I mean, certainly someone could always make that challenge. I guess I'm not saying that it couldn't be a challenge. It's just another tool, right? People bring constitutional challenges for all sorts of reasons, right? Whether or not they're successful, there would be a lot of factors in that, because just even having the constitutional right doesn't mean you can even get into court to raise that challenge, right? I mean, there are all sorts of requirements to even bring challenges in the first instance. But if you're looking at it from another perspective, if we're in a situation where the science is such, or we're in a situation where we haven't been responsive to an issue, meaning the government, and people are ill and people are drinking dirty water and breathing dirty air and having, you know, disproportionate impacts, then why shouldn't we have this legal mechanism to provide justice in those circumstances?
Back in 2013, when state lawmakers asked voters to approve changes to the state's gambling language in the Constitution, they also passed corresponding language laying out how the amendment would be utilized. And since that amendment has been discussed and looked at, you know, judges and other interested parties have also been able to refer to that corresponding legislation. Why is this amendment being passed without any corresponding legislation elaborating on the new rights?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think that's been in play. I've heard it being discussed.
Is it a mistake not to do it without it?
I don't think it's a mistake. No, I think that there certainly
Why? It seems like it would be better.
This is more of about a value in a lot of ways of what's important to, you know, how we're viewing what's important to us. I mean, I have to say, I mean, I don't feel like gambling is at the same, comes to the same level of when you're talking about what you need to fundamentally exist on this world in terms of your health. And
yeah, in that case, the amendment was much clearer. It said you can have up to 7 casino facilities, and there was a lot less wiggle room, and they still felt the need to do corresponding legislation. Here, you know, we're talking about very broad, important rights, and it seems like to enact that with 15 words, you know, is kind of a shortcoming, especially, you know, wouldn't it be nice to know what lawmakers were thinking when they meant, you know, clean air and clean water?
Well, I mean, there's certainly a support, you know, sponsor's memo. I think there could also be guidance that could be created to help articulate this, but I don't think it's necessary at this stage for there to be a corresponding piece of legislation that would go into it. It's a much more complicated issue than defining how many locations you can have in a gambling site.
We're discussing a constitutional amendment that would create a right in New York to clean air, clean water, and a healthful environment. And our guest is Kate Carrera, Deputy Director of Environmental Advocates NY, which supports the language. Another part of the amendment has to do with healthful environment. What counts as environment, and what should we think of as healthful? I mean, it seems like that's a very specific word choice, healthful. So what does that mean, especially compared to maybe like clean?
I think it's probably has, you know, similar meanings to clean, somewhere where we can live in a vibrant environment. They can, you know, be sure that they have the right to not be impacted by different environmental sources and to thrive in their communities.
And when we talk about environment, are we just referring to like nature, or could this refer to, say, the environment that you might go to school in, or, you know, your daycare or other public settings?
Again, the scope of environment isn't defined. I think you're right. We have all sorts of types of environments. You know, just to be clear, though, I mean, it's not as broad as some other constitutional amendments in other states. I mean, for Pennsylvania, for instance, has a similar constitutional right to the environment, which includes aesthetic values, right? So, I mean, there are all sorts of ways to kind of provide boundaries and limitations on that. And, for instance, the choice to not include aesthetic values would show some limitation in, you know, New York's proposal.
Yes, but speaking of Pennsylvania, in 1971, the voters of the Keystone State approved an update to their constitution, which included, among other things, a right to clean air, pure water, and to the preservation of the natural, scenic, historic, and, as you say, aesthetic values of the environment. How do you think that amendment has worked out over the last 50 years? Has it been meaningful?
It's been meaningful, and in recent history, yeah. A local community banned fracking in their community. The state passed a law that preempted that, and they challenged it, and they won based on that provision of the Constitution.
Does Pennsylvania still have fracking, though?
I believe they do, yeah.
So how does that fit with this sort of rights enshrined in their Constitution now? Because I know environmental advocates would argue that fracking is a very harmful to the environment, especially when it has to do with potentially contaminating water.
It is a very harmful thing, and we don't have it in New York. Their situation was very different in terms of, you know, that example is not comparable to what would happen in New York.
Theoretically, if New York's fracking ban was overturned, if, you know, a future legislature, future governor said, you know, we want to allow fracking, would this constitutional amendment potentially make it so that you couldn't have fracking in New York?
Well, it would certainly give you a hook to challenge it. Not on its face, would it? But, you know, it would certainly give you a hook to challenge something like that, yeah.
How do you imagine enforcement of the amendment working in the future?
Well, it's not a law to be enforced in the same way that we enforce smokestack pollution or effluent that's coming out of a pipe, right? So it's a limitation on government. It's a check on government. It's a check on all levels of government. So when the legislature goes to pass a law that relates to perhaps press or speech, right, there's a screen. They don't pass laws that would infringe upon our rights to free speech, right? So similar. There would be this kind of similar screen, similar acknowledgement in legislating, in decision-making at all different levels of the government, that the decisions that they are going to make can infringe upon those particular rights that are enumerated in the Constitutional Bill of Rights. You know, I think one way that I really like talking about this, and I understand all the holes you're kind of placing in it, and there are some things that will need to be sorted out over time. But the most important, you know, thing is that it's really a precautionary approach. It's a precautionary principle, which is something that is adopted in jurisdictions all over the world, right? We have thousands of environmental laws on the books here in New York. That's true. We have regulations, we have laws, we have all sorts of things. And they all go to do limit pollution, regulate pollution, or clean up pollution. Nothing's really focused about not creating pollution or protecting people before something happens. And that's the precautionary principle, and that's something that's widely accepted across the world in international law and all sorts of jurisdictions as an appropriate way to regulate the environment. So this really is that in a lot of ways. It is completely a paradigm shift in thinking about how we protect our communities and the health of New Yorkers.
And after a quick break, we'll continue our discussion with Kate Carrera, Deputy Director of Environmental Advocates NY. When we get back, we'll discuss the campaign to ratify this amendment and critiques of adding environmental rights to the state constitution.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
You're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're talking with Kate Carrera, Deputy Director of Environmental Advocates NY, which is backing a constitutional amendment that would create a right in New York to clean air, clean water, and a healthful environment. So the amendment has passed the legislature twice, which means it needs to be approved by the voters in order to take effect next year. When this question appears on the ballot in November, how would you like the amendment question framed for New Yorkers?
I mean, I think the question is probably will be pretty fairly similar to what the legislation, you know, asks. You know, do you believe that you have a right to clean air, clean water, and a healthful environment?
Do you think that there needs to be additional explanation of how this would work in practice?
No, I do not. I do not. I think as a mom, if I was faced with that question, I am a mom, and I would be thinking about, I already think about daily how, you know, every time my daughter drinks something or eats something or we go outside, how we're impacted daily or the toxics that are in our food supply. I think about those things daily, and I think a lot of New Yorkers do. I think parents do all the time. So I think when people are faced with that question, it's really a no-brainer. I can't imagine, you know, many New Yorkers checking, no, I don't think I deserve the right to drink clean water or breathe clean air or live in a healthy environment.
Do you think, though, when that choice is presented, it should reflect both sides of the argument? Because there are people who are opposed to the amendment.
Yeah, and I think the people that must be opposed to this, you know, or have to be responsible in some way for creating pollution and an unhealthy space for us.
But you're okay with them getting to explain why they think this might not be the best way to pursue, say, clean air and clean water?
I mean, I think that we will hear that leading up to, you know, a ballot campaign. You know, you can fully expect a robust campaign from the environmental community. And as always, I'm sure we will hear the other side for those that oppose it.
Yeah, in the last 2.5 decades, I think 19 of about 25 constitutional amendments put before voters have been approved, according to reporting by the Watertown Daily Times. How do you ensure this gets approved? What sort of campaign do you anticipate the environmental community will wage in behalf of this amendment?
I mean, I think a lot of it starts with education. I think that, you know, there are lots of, you know, organizations even outside the environmental community that have shown support for this measure. And I think really it's just up to the general New Yorkers. And I think that, you know, as we continue to see environmental crises across the state, all over the place, from Newburgh's contaminated water supply to the residents in Hoosick Falls who still don't have clean water, to those impacted by the worst air quality down in New York City. I think this is a real important thing for New Yorkers. I don't think that the environment and how we relate to it and in terms of how we are responding to it is important to people now. And I think we have shifted in a lot of ways over the years. And that this is really a core value for people.
You brought up the issue of Hoosick Falls and their clean water. Again, fast forwarding to 2022, what would this amendment mean for that ongoing situation? Would that, you know, create some sort of legal standing for the people of Hoosick Falls? Would it mandate some sort of government action? What do you envision happening?
Yeah, I mean, again, the right in itself doesn't mandate anything, right? The right in itself would not mandate it necessarily action, but it would give the Hoosick Falls another remedy, another way to seek recourse and justice from what they've been experiencing.
And that recourse would be through the court system?
Yeah. I mean, it would give them another tool to challenge,
and
getting clean out, to have access to clean water.
Could this also then impact, say, the things that we can purchase? You know, my wife recently informed me that the soy candles that she's buying now are better for the air than whatever candles we were buying before. Theoretically, would those more dangerous candles not be available in the future under this amendment?
You know, I think I appreciate your question. And, I think that what's frustrating about the conversations that sometimes occur related to this is that people really like to get to the really little kind of inconsequential examples, I recently in debate in the assembly, will this impact what I can barbecue on my grill, mm-hmm. right? I mean, these are not issues in which individual's wage constitutional challenges over, right? And there are other remedies for that, that we have in terms of just our own personal rights, right? So this is not about you or me being impacted by each other. It's not about, soy candle manufacturers or non-soy candle manufacturers, putting contaminants in their candle. This is really about how government makes decisions and protecting and how they protect their population.
Do you think it's reasonable, though, that these questions are coming up, considering how concise the amendment is and that there is no corresponding legislation with it?
Yeah, I mean, I think they are reasonable. I think that's why this campaign requires a huge education campaign to explain exactly how it works and what it means. And I think maybe to assuage fears that this means something broader. I've heard lots of examples of, well, does this mean I don't have a right, or I have a right to do yoga in my backyard. I mean, they become nonsensical, really. I think explaining to people that, first and foremost, this is like constitutional amendments to your Bill of Rights are, inalienable rights that are given to us, the people, right? They're reserved for us. And that's important because that's a really important aspect of our democracy, right? And the way that we have a kind of federalist system of rights. That's protecting us from government action.
Well, the future you kind of described in terms of seeking recourse is one through the courts. And, that potential future has been outlined by organizations that say that they are opposed to, actions that will bog down the court system further. And they argue that this legislation, this amendment, is really just a boon to trial lawyers in New York because of all the future legal cases it will create for them. What do you think of that critique?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard that as well. I mean, we've seen the other states that do have similar amendments. As I mentioned before, Pennsylvania and Montana has one. I mean, that fear hasn't occurred in other places. I mean, as I've also said, bringing constitution, you don't just bring willy-nilly a constitutional challenge. When and if it is challenged, I mean, those are specific test cases that will be used. You know, and the other thing is this doesn't stop all of the existing legal challenges that exist, right? I mean, it doesn't supplant anything and doesn't really add to it. It might give lawyers another tool, that's right, but you'll have the same challenges to projects that currently exist over technicalities. I mean, quite frankly, it would be easier to challenge a project on a technicality, right, than it would be on a constitutional matter. So there are, you know, it's really another tool, toolkit that would be available.
Another group that came out in opposition was the New York Farm Bureau. And I was a little struck by that because, you know, theoretically, this is a group that, you know, their livelihood, farmers' livelihoods rely on, you know, clean water, clean soil. So what do you make of their concerns? I mean, do you think that a group like this, you know, can have valid concerns, or do you dismiss them?
I think they are misinformed in a lot of ways. I think a lot of, you know, the criticism also I've also heard from the New York Business Council in previous is just a misunderstanding of how the right actually works and how it would and what it actually would mean. So I, you know, feel that the Farm Bureau's criticism and, you know, skepticism is similarly based or misplaced.
Well, we've been speaking with Kate Carrera, Deputy Director of Environmental Advocates NY. Kate, thank you so much for taking the time. And, you know, who knew it took this long to talk about 15 little words?
Thank you. I appreciate your time, too.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by Destiny USA. Shopping, dining, and entertainment all in one location. For more information, go to www.destinyusa.com.